Welcome, everybody, to the September JPAC meeting. I know some of us were together last night, so it feels like we just left. Can you hear me? Okay, thank you. We do have a quorum, so we'll go ahead and I call the meeting to order. Let's first begin and have everybody introduce themselves, beginning with Commissioner Vega Peterson.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Jessica Vega Peterson from Multnomah County.
Greg Gertson, Metro Council.
Danny Doyle, City of Beaverton.
Ann McInerney-Miogo, Mayor for the City of Vancouver.
Ben Nelson, Premier.
Roy Rogers, Washington.
Paul Savas, Clackamas County.
Tim Knapp, Mayor of Wilsonville, representing the cities of Clackamas County.
Chris Warner, City of Portland.
Carly Francis, WSDOT.
Mandy Putney, ODOT, alternate for Ryan Winchemmer.
I'm tempted to ask about Leah Treat.
Last in the past.
Curtis
it's retro day. It's retro day.
Retro day.
Peabody, yeah.
Bill Wyatt from the Port of Portland.
Richard Whitman from DEQ.
Marlene.
Margie from Metro. Margie Driver.
Okay, let's go ahead. The audience, please introduce yourself.
Walter Clement, Oregon citizen. Tom Hargraff, China.
Sharon Nassif, thirdbridgenow.org. Tracy Moreland, Clackamas County.
Dave Rose with China.
In the back.
Mayor Carney Lace, alternate for the city's blessing.
Bob Stacey, Metro Council, Tardy.
I happen to know you. Mayor, Dwayne, would you like to come sit at the table to represent the cities of Washington County?
Denny's here. We get to vote.
Oh, Denny's here.
Oh, yeah.
Whoops. I apologize. My error. Thank you.
I see you, Mr. Mayor. Where's Denny? It's a new TV show.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go ahead and ask if there's any public testimony. We have one request from Sharon Nassif. Anybody else in the audience that would like to make public testimony? Go ahead and you can sit here. Well, I'm sorry. Over here is fine.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair and members. I think everybody's so happy because it's raining again, and it's the real rain. It actually feels like Oregon rain and not just a funny mist. For the record, I'm Sharon Nassif. I am with ThirdBridgeNow.org. Our nonprofit name is Economic Transportation Alliance. And actually, we do transportation in Oregon and in Southwest Washington and have been involved in several issues. And today I'd like to talk about, a few weeks back we were talking about the Port of Portland and the fact that we're very fortunate. It has won several awards. Excellent port. It is well balanced with the economy, freight coming in and out, people coming in and out, and served. We have won all kinds of awards for coming in and out and also for honesty as far as how we deal our clients using it and gouging. The other thing about the port is overcapacity. Airport is totally overcapacity, and so is every facility around it that feeds into it. All the roads, all the systems. It is on a floodplain, It is next to one of our largest marine drives, dikes. And there is no need or reason to expand it or change it in any ways when it has won so many awards. Going north to Clark County, or just above it, where the land is flat, there's a lot of it, an international airport, you can have the kind of transit in and out you want, you can have specific roads for air cargo in and out, and one of the ways to pay for it would be to make it an emergency center. All over the United States, we're having worse weather. You could bring people in, help them with medical, give them FEMA, treat them in the hotels, and then send them back to where they came from. And when we have an emergency, we will be ready to have something ready for us. In the meantime, we would have an international airport. If you get it close to I-5 and the rail lines, like further up, you can attract the traffic from Olympia and transport people from all kinds of other areas interested in newer facilities. Well, so since we were talking about emergencies and doing something, please don't change it. I love travel. I have wonderful times. I get off that airplane, bag in hand, down the hallway, down the escalator, past the second island, hand up, and somebody grabs my bag and I'm home within less than an hour every time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any other public testimony? Okay, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Or excuse me, I have a couple announcements, and then we'll move on to the consent agenda. Many of us in this room attended Rail Evolution in Vancouver, B.C. I want to say thank you to all of those that joined us that up there. I always learned a lot. I've been several times now, but it's always something new for me. Thank you for all those that did participate and join us up there. It's a really exciting group of projects that Vancouver, BC is working on. It's a really exciting place to go visit. I'd like to also just happen to know, I think we're going to, are we still having technical difficulty with the screen? Okay. So I just want to let you know, we do know that we're having some technical difficulty today. The screen's going to be a little bit dim, but we'll move forward with the presentations. So now I'd like to find, are there any announcements that any of the members would like to make at this time? Okay, we'll move on. So we'll move to the consent agenda. The first item is resolution number 19-55018, and this is for the purpose of adding or amending existing projects to the 2018-2021 Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program. And these involve 13 projects that impact Metro, ODOT, City of Portland, SMART, TriMet, and Washington County. And the second item on the consent agenda is the consideration of the July 18th, 2019 JPAC meeting minutes. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, thank you. Good. A motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. Thank you. We'll now move on to the first item on the for our business today, and this is regarding the regional flexible funds. It is that time of again. As you know, every 3 years, JPAC and the Metro Council decide how to spend the region's allotment of our federal transportation funds. We call them the regional flexible funds. And in this cycle, we anticipate allocating about $142 million to be obligated from 2022 to 2024. So before we walk through the evaluation process and next steps for the RFFA, I'd like to review the timeline of this process. So with Dan's help, we are currently in the technical analysis and public input phase. Metro, in April 5th, called for project proposals. The deadline for submission of those proposals was June 21st. And then June through August, we've been focusing on the project evaluation and risk assessment. And then a 30-day public comment period began in September 6th, focusing on outreach to the community, neighborhood organizations, coordinating committees, and other stakeholders. And on next Thursday, September 26th, from 5 to 7, will be a public hearing here in the Metro Council chambers, and I'll hear any public testimony. And I want to make sure invite JPAC members. You're more than welcome to join us. We'd like to have you, if you have the opportunity and time, to join us at that hearing and to be able to listen to public testimony. Then in October through November, we will focus on identifying or working with the coordinating committees and priorities. And then in November through January, we will then develop the proposed timeline that includes the JPAC's proposal to the Metro Council. And that decision will be made by JPAC and referral on December 19th. So the following materials presentation, Dan is going to review with us. And Dan is a principal transportation planner here at Metro and very experienced in this subject.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair Craddock, and good morning, members of JPAC. I'm here this morning to give you an update on where we are at in the regional flexible funds process to date. As you're aware, this is the process that we follow to select projects and investments that we make with the region's allotment of federal transportation funds that Metro and JPAC and Metro Council are responsible for allocating. So I'm going to walk you through where we're at currently and then talk a bit about the decision-making timeline and the next steps coming up in the process. Just a real quick reminder, back in April, JPAC adopted a policy direction for the regional flexible funds. In that, it included investments for step one, which is continuing our regional commitments to our bond repayments that we've used for regional transit construction, and we also bonded funding to use in active transportation project development. We also continued region-wide program investments as well as a strategic investment in regional data collection and survey work. What we're really focused on here today is step two and the capital investments bucket of funding. We have approximately $43 million available in that bucket, and as you recall, the policy direction for this cycle has continued what we followed in previous cycles, where we target 75% of that funding towards active transportation and complete streets projects, and the remaining 25% goes to projects that improve freight mobility and economic development. So following the adoption of the policy back in April, we immediately pivoted into a call for projects for the Step 2 bucket of funds. And the deadline for applying was in June. We received a total of 23 applications. The entire list of applications is in the materials that were in your packet. But as you can see, we received about $78 million in project funding requests. And as I stated, we have about $43 million available. We've spent the months of July and August conducting a technical evaluation on those projects. The technical evaluation is one of four pieces of input that will be provided to you over the next month or next 3 months to help you make your final decision on the final package of projects that we select. So I'm going to just kind of walk you through each of those four pieces of information that we'll be working with over the next few months to help you better understand how those can be used to help you reach your decisions. So to talk a little bit about how the projects were evaluated, we had an independent evaluation team comprised of transportation professionals from agencies that were not applying for funding. They looked at how well the projects performed in each of the four RTP policy priority areas: equity, safety, climate, and congestion. And you'll recall from our policy discussions that we carried these RTP policy priorities forward into our funding allocation process. Within each of those four policy areas, we looked at the projects in two ways. We looked first at the opportunity, looking at the level of need that that project addressed. So, for example, how severe was the congestion in a project area, or what was the crash history there, or who lives in that project area, particularly looking at communities of color and other underserved communities, and looking at how the project would help address those issues. And then we looked at the benefit of the project, and that was looking at how to what degree did the project address the need? How robust were the active transportation elements, for example, or how much quicker could it help transit move through a corridor? How could it, what elements would address congestion? So looking at the projects in those two areas, we felt gave us a good rounded look at what the benefits of the project would really be. So we illustrated these outcomes in a series of radar charts that are included in your packet as well. So we plotted these 8 points on this chart and then connected them with a line. So you can see from this example that points farther to the outside of the chart indicated a higher outcome in that particular area, while a point closer to the center indicated a lower outcome. So staff is working to develop draft scenarios for TPAC and JPAC to discuss in their upcoming meetings. So this is basically just the kind of the raw information at this point. We've provided the entire Excel workbook that was used to put these together on the Regional Flexible Funds website, and that is available if you are interested in doing further analysis or digging in further. So in addition to the technical evaluation, there are three other sources that will be available to you in your discussions. We're conducting a risk assessment of the projects. We've contracted with Kittleson and Associates to do an independent evaluation of the projects. They're looking at trying to identify any risks to the project that could affect either the scope, the budget, or the timeline. Risks to a project could occur in a couple of ways that we're looking at. One way relates to the project's scoping and the cost estimating. So Kittleson is looking at the projects to make sure that the costs have been reviewed by an engineer, that any outside organizations or agencies that are impacted or involved in the project have been consulted and are in agreement or on board with the development of the project. The other factor that they're looking for is identifying any outside issues that could result in a change of scope. There may be elements of a project that are not entirely in control of an applicant's authority, such as if it's crossing the railroad. So it's making sure that those factors have been identified and addressed and understanding to what degree they represent a risk to the project scope actually being delivered as it was applied for. So Kittleson is in the middle of working on their final report. We're looping back with applicants now to get more information from them on their projects, and they'll have their final risk assessment report completed by the end of September. As Chair Craddock mentioned, we are in the middle of a public comment period. This is a really important part of the process. We get to hear from the public and community groups about their input on the projects, either individual ones or the project package as a whole. And this gives you folks direct input from the citizens that you represent on what their thoughts and feelings are about these projects. The public comment period goes until October 7, and as Chair Craddock mentioned, we are having a hearing next Thursday evening that I hope as many of you can make it as possible. We'll have that public comment report wrapped up in mid-October. We'll have a high-level interim report ready for the October TPAC meeting, and we'll finish the final report by mid-October, hopefully in time for the JPAC meeting in October. And then the fourth step is identifying the County Coordinating Committee priorities. This is an optional step, but it gives the three coordinating committees and the City of Portland an opportunity to tell us which projects are their priorities. And this is really the opportunity to hear from the local agencies about why these projects are important, why they were selected for funding, for application for funding through the Regional Flexible Funds process, and providing that extra layer of local knowledge that we might not be gathering through the other three sources of input to the process. We will provide coordinating committees in Portland with those technical evaluation, risk assessment, and public comment reports prior to your reaching a final decision on that. So you'll have that information available to help inform your discussion. We're hoping to have the priorities identified prior to the November JPAC meeting. I've been working with the coordinating committees on their timelines, and I've been seeing head nods that that would work for the coordinating committees. But if we run into a problem on that, having an identification of priorities by the December TPAC or JPAC discussion before we make a final decision would be the opportunity for that. So this just illustrates how we will use all this information to reach a decision. As I mentioned, there are the four pieces of information that we'll use to put together a TPAC recommendation that will be brought to this body for your approval and then submitted to council for action. Council action is scheduled for in January. We are needing to have JPAC approve a package of projects by December in order to maintain our MTIP adoption timeline later on in 2020. So this just kind of illustrates the next steps in the process. We'll spend the next three meetings here talking with you about the projects and putting together a recommended package of projects by your December meeting, and then moving into 2020 with council action and MTIP adoption later on in the year. So those are my comments. Again, there's the project website. The link to the public comment tool is on there, as well as all of the information on the projects that I summarized here today. And I'm happy to take any questions you might have.
Questions? Comments? Mayor Knapp.
Thank you. How are you going to weigh the input of the coordinating committees relative to the scoring on your radar diagrams?
Well, I think that's a question for this group to consider. We're going to indicate which projects have been indicated by the coordinating committees as priorities. But it's ultimately up to TPAC and JPAC as to how they want to use that information in a recommendation.
Thank you.
Dan.
Commissioner Savas?
Yeah, Dan, thanks for the presentation. I'm top of page three, and I think the radar concept is kind of interesting, but I'm trying to get maybe better definition I could explain to the public on the opportunity aspect. I read the definition at the top of between opportunity and benefit, and it seems somewhat ambiguous of what opportunity is. And when I look at some of the projects and how they scored relative to opportunity and benefits in those four categories, I can't see any kind of, on like a bike ped type of project, any kind of the Courtney Avenue versus the Gladstone Trolley Bridge, for example, the scoring on the opportunity and the scoring on the benefits doesn't seem to be similar, even though they both have similarities in the sense that they're bike ped and it encourages transportation connections and so forth. So I'm just trying to understand, or how do I explain better, the opportunity aspect of that. The benefits part is pretty clear.
Before you answer that question, I see a lot of shuffling of papers. The memo is in the bottom of your packet. It looks like this. He's referring to page 3, September 6, 2019 memo. It's one of the last sheets. And he's referring to the descriptions and the terms on page 3. I just want to orientate the rest of JPAC.
Yeah, the top right corner says September 6, 2019.
Yep. The opportunity score for a project was based on things such as what's the crash history in that area. So streets that may not have a high crash history may not have as big an opportunity score as streets that have a more serious crash history. Or if there's a more serious levels of congestion. Those are the types of things that were looked at in determining what that opportunity score was. So how, what's the magnitude of the problem that needs to be solved with the project? Is the basic concept behind the opportunity score?
Any other comments or questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the preceding questions are very apt because my instinct is to default toward these graphs, these radar charts. Although I have to say, I learned what radar looks like by watching Dr. Strangelove, and this is a different kind of radar. So some greater understanding.
And listening to Pink Floyd. Okay, I just have to add that.
I always age myself just by showing up. Come on. This memo is a great start, but we have to get clarity among ourselves about how those rankings are achieved, because this has the appearance of objectivity. And there's great experience at the coordinating committees, but it's not universally shared across this group. And so if we have a single point of contact that clarifies and crystallizes a lot of differing factors, that's a more reliable guide for me as a regional decision maker. So I want to make sure we build confidence in this tool and respond to these expressions or questions so that we can all rely on it in making the decisions we have to make in this round. I really appreciate the advance that it represents, and I want to make sure that it's reliable to everybody.
Right now.
Thank you. One other comment. I have a concern that the opportunity concept omits or overlooks the idea that we might build a connection where there is no connection and there's no crash history there because there's no connection there for people to be on it. And yet, by completing a connection, moving from segmented pieces of an alternative mode system into a more complete system, I think we have significant opportunity. And I'm not clear if that kind of concept is inherent in what is showing on that diagram, which goes to my level of confidence in what appears to be an analytical approach. But you know, this is all new and a little hazy for me, at least so far. Thank you.
Yeah, there's different kind of opportunities, and if you spend some time with each of these radar charts, I'm not gonna stop thinking about Commissioner Stacey's comments every time I look at these.
Sorry.
Now. Yeah. So if you kind of look at the example on page 4. There's the safety benefit and there's the safety opportunity, but then there's also the congestion benefit and the congestion opportunity, or the climate benefit and the climate opportunity. And so for a project that is creating a new opportunity, for example, for new bike-ped connections, that would potentially score well in the climate opportunity or the congestion opportunity despite crash history. And so each one kind of has its own heuristic, and I think that's what's important about having 4 different criteria and weighing them against each other. It's not just based on crash history, is what I'm letting you know.
Mr. Savas?
Yeah. I appreciate Councillor Stacey's comments. So, Dan, I don't think you meant to say that opportunities only defined by crash. I think you meant that as an example of safety, for example, right?
Correct.
Okay,
yes.
Correct. So I'm looking at page 11, and I'm looking at the trolley trail bridge replacement, for example. If I look at what, as I define opportunity, I mean, for me, knowing the area, and I'm sure the staff associated with all of these projects, and both even on climate, I think there's great opportunity, but yet it scores low in those two categories. It's a connection where there is no connection. It's population areas on both sides of a river. It's a short connection. I think it's tremendous potential. But yet, from an opportunity standpoint, I'm not saying they're synonymous, but they're close. They score low. So is this going to be this kind of scoring to be in lieu of an actual criteria scoring?
Well, this is the technical analysis part of it. As I mentioned, there are 4 pieces of information that JPAC can use to develop their package of projects. So you don't necessarily have to follow, you know, what the technical rankings are or what the score. That's why we didn't rank the projects. We simply said this is how they perform in each of these four policy areas. So if you feel that there's additional information that needs to be considered, you know, that needs to be brought to the discussion. The technical rankings were generated by five people who looked at the information that was submitted and based their evaluation of the projects on what was included in the applications. It was an attempt to be as objective and as fair-handed with all the projects as could be done. So I don't have an explanation for why each project scored the way that it may have to share with you today, but I think that's something we can talk with TPAC about if they want to dig into that a little bit more. Happy to have that conversation.
Great. Well, I appreciate this, and if this tool is simply an additional tool, you know, I guess it's less of a concern. But if it becomes the tool in lieu of another tool that actually might be more definitive and clear to help guide projects or corrections or new information to make the thing look better or score better, probably score better if there's something that's missing, it's probably going to be hard to discern that from just this tool alone. So I guess, again, if this is just an additional tool, I'm fine with it.
Right. It's one of four pieces of information that will be used to make a determination on the investment of projects.
Any other questions or comments? Okay. So, Dan, regarding the timeline, will there be any kind of discussion regarding the regional flexible funds at the October meeting? I know we have in the timeline October and November. We're working with the coordinating committees, but will there be anything specific at JPAC in October?
Yes, I will be back here for the next 3 months. We'll get to be very close friends by then.
Okay, but meanwhile, you'll be working with the coordinating committees to review the projects and have a discussion.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Surely I do have one question.
Mr. Rogers?
At the coordinating committee level, are you looking at rankings, meaning 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Are you looking at saying they're all great, we love them all? What are you seeking?
We leave that process up to the coordinating committees on how they want to indicate their priorities. You may say simply this one project is our priority, or you may give a ranking, or you may indicate, you know, two or three projects maybe your priorities of the one you've submitted. We leave that up to you to decide for yourself which is the best way to indicate your priorities.
One comment, one question. That's not real helpful to you or we
no,
can rank
right,
them all.
Right.
We can say they're all great.
Thank you. Yeah, more honest answers are preferences rankings.
Right.
And why is because we have a technical score for this. We will have a technical score for the risk assessment. We'll have a summary of the public comments in which got one, and then they'll all kind of be in an order. So when we don't get rankings from the committee, it's hard to put it against these other list, if that makes sense.
Yeah, then my follow-up is that for instance, in our particular case, you're asking us to rank our projects, not other projects.
Exactly.
Correct.
Yeah.
We can do that.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah. I'm sure Commissioner Savas would love to have a Clackamas County be your priority.
We'll rank it.
Well, you have to come on down to Clackamas County.
So any other comments or questions? So Dan will be back in October. The coordinating committees will be discussing this during this next month or between now and the next JPAC meeting. And then we'll make the final decision will be recommendation will be made to the Metro Council in December. So thank you very much for your
today. Yep,
and then I'd just like to, invite the JPAC members to the public hearing next Thursday, September 26th, here in the Metro Council Chambers at 5 p.m. Okay, we'll move on to the next item. This is regarding TISMO. I always like that word, Transportation System Management and Operations Strategy. We've had a plan between 2010 and 2020 that has currently been guiding our activities in TISMO. This was the first time that the region has collectively worked together on these strategies. The focus is to bring advances to the system, the ITS system, intelligence, transportation system, and operations to better manage this regionally. So we're ready for the beginnings of the next step. So we're now nearing 2020, and we have a new RTP, which was adopted in 2018, which I've identified both policies and goals that provide direction to the strategy. And so the updated strategy and program investments that we support with regional flexible funds. So you are here today, Caleb, to help update us and take us on to the next step in this process. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Chair Craddock, and good morning, members of JPAC. My name is Caleb Winter. I'm the TISMO program manager. It's Transportation System Management and Operations. Our region's TISMO program works across these four strategic areas. Through TISMO, we're guiding actions and regional coordination to aid travelers and shippers in managing traffic and incidents, minimizing unexpected delay, providing timely and accurate travel information so that everyone can make informed decisions, and really improving safety for all road users through these strategies. So why does our region have a TISMO strategy? Acting on TISMO strategies is one of our region's approaches to a low-cost way to address our transportation issues. No one wants to leave 20, 30, or 40 minutes early every day because they can't count on reliable transit or road operations. And to increase the reliability, we've built out technologies. You've seen them on the freeways, improved our traffic signal system coordination on arterials. As a region, we can all use our infrastructure more efficiently by checking traveler information, growing number of sources. Both these are originated by our public partners into private partnerships. So they're growing sources for that, you've seen. And in a growing range of vehicles, too, people are starting to see traffic signal information and other details right on their dashboard. So as we're potentially bringing these new efficiencies, we should explore, you know, how this digital infrastructure brings our region new efficiencies. Another example complements the enhanced transit corridor planning you've seen. This effort, you know, considers that speeds are slowing down for transit operations, 6, 7, and 8%, which really cools ridership and heats up the operation costs. So through TISMO, the regional traffic engineers agreed upon a concept for next-generation transit signal priority that involves smarter calculation to move people in transit. So in the next 2 years, our TISMO partners, your agencies, will be working together to upgrade intersections and upgrade the central signal system and other systems that drive the smarter use of that transit signal priority. And that'll be monitoring traffic conditions, so we'll have these updated signal performance measures. And also supported as freight intelligent transportation systems that are expanding in all counties that provide more reliable travel to the airport freight distribution hub and the industrial areas throughout our region. So through TISMO, we create a safer system. How agencies respond to incidents makes a big difference. National studies show that 20% of all incidents are secondary crashes. And that every 1 minute after a primary incident continues to be a hazard, the likelihood of a secondary crash increases by almost 3%. Studies also show that traffic crashes and struck-by incidents are a leading cause of on-duty injuries and deaths for law enforcement, firefighters, towing recovery, and other recovery personnel. And a struck-by incident is the term for a responder getting hit while on scene. Oops, let's go back. Yeah. So our TISMO partners also are looking on their arterials for promising new ways for addressing the region's highest crash intersections. This includes radar and cameras to detect pedestrians and freight traffic to automate responses like holding all signals red to avoid crashes and complete safe crossings. So a preview of the TISMO, we'll be looking back. Like Chair Craddock said, we've got almost 10 years through the current plan. We'll look back at the outcomes and reflect So this is a preview of kind of what that is. We'll do that when we get started with this TISMO strategy update. Of course, the strategies and actions that helped us coordinate investments, they helped us across jurisdictional boundaries and through agency responsibilities to be working based on this plan. We'll reflect on the capabilities of our region across the dimensions that are critical to managing and operating the system. These include expanding the data communications network and formalizing partnerships to share assets, archiving data, sharing knowledge on advanced performance measures, establishing a traffic incident management coalition for the region where responders can meet and engineers can meet to discuss better responses, and working through planning processes together. Your support of regional flexible funds for the TISMO program is instrumental to the efforts I've described. The TISMO vision includes being a nationally recognized leader, and our evidence of our progress on this are the additional projects we've won from competitive funds, such as the 2014 Tiger Grant for arterial and freeway traffic management systems that go from Washington County to the airport, and a unique multimodal integrated corridor management planning study for the I-84 travel shed, and most recently, the Advanced Transportation, Congestion Mitigation, and Technologies Deployment Grant. This is one through U.S. Department of Transportation. And that's going to serve us in a number of ways. Smarter management for Cornelius Pass Road, Highway 212 and 224. It's a big down payment on our next generation transit signal priority capability. And it'll expand the Oregon State Police crash scene reconstruction technology. So, as we get started with the TISMO strategy, we've got tasks ahead. Included in the scope of work is an equity assessment to align TISMO implementation with regional policy outcomes on equity. We'll gather stakeholders after thinking through a participation plan. We'll present highlights from the program evaluation and revisit best practice among tech companies that TISMO partners across the region have adopted, which is a capability maturity look. It's kind of like a self-grading exercise. So we'll look at our core progress on traffic management, incident response, and performance measures. And the results, a shared understanding among operators. How are we going to level up from what we do in an ad hoc manner, perhaps today, through a shared vision for integrating those efforts among operators? A final deliverable includes a set of regional prioritized actions that advance TISMO at both the region-wide level and also tailored to operating along corridors. These actions become an agreement on what concepts to incorporate into systems that will serve us through what we all know will be a really transformational decade ahead in terms of new and connected forms of mobility. So our participation from the bottom up here is that participation plan, then strategy development, then into an adoption process. Along the way, we'll have staff and consultant expertise to work effectively with planning advisors from around the region, as well as engineers and operations advisors. And this is described, the tasks and deliverables in the handout for today, showing that we're just at the beginning of the TISMO strategy update. And please let me know when you'd like to check in during these phases or have any comments about the tasks and deliverables ahead, because we're just starting out. And I wanted to underscore that, through the RTP update, that we'll be guided by the RTP goals that are established through community input, and we'll be applying them as a lens through this strategy update. Thank you. That's all I have for...
Okay.
Getting started.
So, per the timeline, basically, you see that sometime in mid-2021 is when you'll be done with the work. Is that correct?
In mid-2020?
I see that in March of 2021 is about the target date that you'll be somewhere up.
I think we'll have a first look. It's going to, Sorry. Yeah, we'll gather. So transport is a subcommittee of TPAC that is chaired by Kate Freitag at ODOT and AJ O'Connor at TriMet, and we'll start with participation there. We'll also add some planning advisors. So we really, I want to gather those folks together, but we'll set them on course to deliver an outline, or at least by then.
Okay, so what comments, questions do you have? Mayor Knapp.
Thank you. So we're 10 years into kind of this concept in this region. I see your phase two item on this chart, and I'm reading the description of phase two. What seems to not be there to me is how are we evaluating how effective those components that we've already implemented have been. So is our success measured in which pieces we have implemented that we said we were going to implement, or have we got some kind of analytics that tell us how effective those items that have been implemented have been functioning to do what we hoped they would do, or are we just continuing to hope that they do what they're supposed to?
No, and I hope you provide a summary of details from across the projects through an evaluation that sets us up for this. But individually, we know adaptive signals are proven in Beaverton and Gresham for improving traffic conditions. We have performance metrics on incident management, reducing the number of the time spent that an incident causes a disruption, below 90 minutes per crash. So those organizations. But in terms of, I guess I'm describing investments we make. Those are evaluated, and we can summarize that across the TISMO strategy. For us as a region to have a TISMO strategy, like I was mentioning, I think some of the progress is in our ability to show a build out of the network and systems that we can look at and partner through our operations centers, ODOTs, TriMets, others, bring new capabilities like this next generation transit signal priority.
So the public in general, from my point of view, needs to understand what advantage there has been and we expect to see in the future technologies implemented in TISMO. That information has not been disseminated that I'm aware of in any way that the public could say, oh, I see these signs that are going up, I see whatnot, but what do they really do? I mean, how do they help me? Why should we be supporting this? I think we could do a lot more in terms of disseminating some results kind of information, not overly technical, but to help people understand, what the expected outcomes have been and how well we have moved toward those outcomes.
You're reminding me of the Highway 217 study that when the advisory speed limits went up, the crash warnings, and they've noticed more reliability, more throughput, less severe crashes. So you're right, there's a lot to tell, and that's one part of a TISMO program is communicating that out to the public.
And yet when I get on 217 at 4:20 last night to go to the T2020 meeting and I'm moving at 8 to 10 miles an hour for an extended distance, it's not clear to me what those signs are doing. Mm-hmm. And this is getting to be a significant investment, and it's a technology commitment that the region is making, and people say, but it's not intuitively apparent how well the different components being implemented are working, or which components are more effective and which components may not be as effective even as we have tried them out. So I'm just suggesting that we could do quite a bit more to to communicate with our voters about what is being done and how well it's working.
I agree. Yeah, I hear you. Yep, that's a good suggestion. Thank you,
Mr. Kelsey.
Thank you. When I was looking at this, I'm just curious. How does this fit in as we look at smart cities, smart regions, the broader governance structure is all these different pockets are going to have to come together. What is the strategic governance structure going to have to look like here as we pool and manage and share data? Is that part of this study as well?
Yeah, actually, one thing we've received through that ATC-MTD grant is an ability to look specifically at data structure, data governance for the region. But in terms of, you know, broader smart city strategies that you know, we've seen piloted by City of Portland and others, those are great tests, great pilots before and after we find out if it's a workable technology. And then I think the strength of where TISMO has been is how do we stand that up to bring it out system-wide? How do we incorporate it, make it interoperable with our existing systems?
So will this include data warehousing as well, that whole data warehousing strategy?
We do have to address, yeah, how we keep data into the future, because we know, you know, more and more terabytes are going to be coming in, and therefore can benefit our approach to operating the system.
Mayor Doyle.
Thank you. Thank you, Caleb. I just wondered from the technical committee if Beaverton has been able to share the data we have from our four intersections where we have photo red light and photo radar. I think the number of people that go through a red light at more than 20 miles an hour on a daily basis would astound you. So if you're looking for a reason why we need to start being proactive, that's one of them. Because I didn't believe the numbers, but they've held steady. Yeah. We'll skip the ones that are 10 in red, or the ones that are doing 40 through a green light. But anyhow, I think that would help you justify some of this.
Okay. Thanks.
Just as a note, it seems like most folks have stopped talking specifically about this activity just as a view from the north side of the river. So folks know, one, there is this kind of activity that occurs on the north side of the river because of our population density within the state. You know, some of the funding has come along at different time frames, but we are looking to do some of that overlaying gantry notification on I-5 and building some of these same systems in a way that recognizes the way that the region has adopted those strategies. So the advisory speed approach, which is different than our Seattle area, which actually has a regulatory speed approach, and other coordination activities. So we are active in this and just recently opened our second ramp meter, and so are, you know, and doing these pre and post studies to understand for the expected reduction in crashes and the expected reduction in at what point breakdown occurs and at what point breakdown recovers, which is actually your incremental growth when you implement these types of tools, to have that information and have that data. It is not a panacea kind of fix, obviously. So it is kind of reducing the pain and adjusting the margins at the outside, oftentimes, on the benefits you see on the transportation system. But just as a note, we are active in this in Clark County and with our partners there.
Thanks.
Any other comments or questions?
So when do you expect that you'll be back to JPAC? Do you have a particular target time? Is it months? 2020. It'll be a while.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, we get to move on to the next item, item number 5.3. This is the Red Line Improvement Project, and Mr. Unsworth will be here, is going to be making the presentation. And of course, this is the Red Line provides that vital connection in our region, including service to Portland International Airport. And as we continue to look at ways to improve our system, TriMet's planning to make the Red Line more reliable and extend service to the Fair Complex Center in Hillsboro. And as that line becomes more reliable, so will the entire transit system. So, Mr. Unsworth, did you want to say something, Mr. Kelsey, first?
Really, where Dave kicks in, I just really want to thank Curtis Robinhold and his team. And just nothing but an outstanding partner on this. There's a lot of immense complexities that our respective teams have put into this, and it's not always easy. But I just really want to reach out. Big thanks to Curtis and his whole team. It's just a great partnership.
Mr. Unsworth.
Chair Craddock and JPEC members, I'm here. Dave Unsworth. I'm the Director of Project Development and Permitting at TriMet.
I'm here to talk to you about the Max Red Line Extension and Reliability Improvement Project. This is probably the third time we've been here to this body to talk to you about this. We've made some great progress, and I'll walk through that. Kind of what I want to talk to you today, if I can start speaking here, describe the project, a little bit of the project history, our consultation, our engagement with others, and project schedule and budget. So most importantly, it's why are we doing this project? Why this project? Why are we spending money on this? And it really comes down to the Gateway Transit Center and PDX is our biggest bottleneck for our system, and I'll explain that in a little bit more detail. It allows us to add substantial service to the west side where there's overcrowding. It allows us to be more reliable with our service. It leverages $100 million of federal funds in a discretionary pot called Small Starts and allows MAX to grow better in the future. So here are the project elements, and you can see on at Gateway and at the airport, we have two single-track segments. So what does that mean? That is where inbound and outbound trains share the same tracks. Recognize we built the Red Line 18 years ago. We didn't have the Green Line. We didn't have the Yellow Line. We didn't have the Orange Line. We were a simpler place back then. And we collectively, through a public-private partnership, thought it was a great idea to do single track as a way of saving some money. May have been a little bit the right time decision at that point, but probably short-sighted in the end. So we need to go back and fix that, and I'll explain why that is. Other elements that are part of that is extending the Red Line service from the Beaverton Transit Center out to Fairplex, and in doing some improvements at Fairplex, that allows us to leverage Small Start dollars with our federal partners to help fix some of the issues that we didn't do back in 2001 when we built the system. So what are our goals? Our goals to extend that service out to the west side. We've heard that often. Why don't we have more service out there? That allow us to do it to Fairplex and allows our system to be much more reliable. And the reason the reliability matters is when we really drilled down and looked at where our on-time reliability was for our trains, it started and ended at train leaving PDX. Someone with a roller holding a door, not being able to go forward, that a delay of a minute just ripples through everything at Gateway. There's block six, I won't get too detailed, but it ripples through the whole system, and it will make a train late that's coming in from Gresham, could make a train late coming in from Clackamas Town Center, and again, it just causes problems throughout the system, so it's time to really fix those. So where are those fixes? Out at Fairplex on the west side, we have a simple improvement that's happening out there. We're having some new switches placed out there. We're having operator break room and signal block systems to allow our trains to dwell there. At Gateway, there are a number of improvements going. You can see the red line there. That is, no pun intended, that is a new bridge that is connecting from the Gateway Transit Center across to Gateway Green Park. And that improvement, right now, you can see, I can't quite point to it, but our single track today has a very tight curve, and both outbound and inbound trains take that. If we're able to put this new bridge there, and that new bridge would also have a maintenance roadway on it that we will widen, allowing for emergency vehicles to access the Gateway Green Park, and we'll also allow bike and peds to go into the park. It's going to be a vast improvement for the park, leveraging some investment we have, multiplicative effect of those dollars. Here's kind of an oblique view of that new bridge. You can see where the station is, and you can see the bridge that goes over I-84, over the Union Pacific Railroad, and underneath the Halsey Ramp. Again, that would have that bike and ped facility on it and an emergency access to the park. A lot of work that needs to go forward. We've had great conversations with ODOT, Union Pacific, making sure that what we're proposing that can be allowed and permitted. At the airport, there is a section from 82nd just short to the station at PDX that is single track. That is probably the biggest component of that. We will replace that with double track all the way through. And through great coordination and work with the Port of Portland, the Port of Portland will be taking down Concourse A. We'll be occupying that area. I think it's been a great regional cooperation as we work together in trying to make sure that we can leverage some federal money to fix our problems that we have. So that's the double tracking. We also have about 5 light rail vehicles we need to buy because we have more service going forward with this project. So kind of the history of this, there was a promise and a request made of TriMet through the West Side Service Enhancement. We need more service on the West Side. We've done that by adding buses. That other call was for additional trains going out to Fairplex. We're fulfilling that with this project. The gateway and airport double track, those were the things when our number one problem with on-time reliability were based on those single track sections. By fixing that, we will be more reliable. Our service will, not only for the Red Line, but for the whole system, will be more reliable. We think it's a very good investment. So our consultation, our engagement, we've done a lot of that. We've had a project advisory group made up of many regional players, as we normally will. They helped us reach a locally preferred alternative that was adopted into the RTP. We've had focused outreach. We have very specific focused outreach with the Gateway Greens folks. That continues today. We have an IGA with the Port of Portland. What will they do? What will we do? We have an IGA, an MOU that's moving to an IGA with the Portland Parks. We have an IGA with just recently, I think, inked with ODOT. And we're working with the Union Pacific Railroad. So lots of good engagement. Well, what did we hear during that engagement? We heard support for that extension. Get that service out. Can't you do it faster? We're trying. Interest in making Gateway Transit Center safer, better. We think there'll be other improvements that are outside the project that occur at the same time and upgrade to some of those stations. And really that support for the access to the Gateway Green Park. This is a twofer. It really does a benefit for everybody. Won't go into a order suggestion. They asked us to look at other ideas. We did. We did diligence. We came to the conclusion that didn't work. So how much does it cost? There's always a number associated with it. We've done a risk assessment. We think the number is about $206 million. We've applied for a federal rating as of August of this year with our federal partners. That's important because we want to be in the president's budget next February. Where is that money coming from? $100 million of that would come from the discretionary dollars. Those are dollars that are called small starts, a capital improvement grant. That could be, we're competing against every around the country for those dollars. Our general fund, through a bonding process, would look at about $105 million. And about $100 million comes from the Port of Portland. So that's kind of the budget that we have right now. There are other ideas that we have to offset some of TriMet's cost. It is a big number. So where are we today? As of July this year, we have been allowed to enter into project development. That's the first step in our federal partners' process of securing those dollars. We have completed 30% design on the project. We have done a risk assessment, so we know where those problems are, and those problems are our homework for what we're going to solve, and any cost of those are associated with the project budget. We have a final design contract that went to our board yesterday, and that was approved. We have a construction management general contract RFP out in the street that will help us make sure we get things right as we're trying to coordinate construction at the airport and at Gateway. Our environmental document, I expect to be completed, if not today, tomorrow, but early next week. It's that close, we believe. And if all goes well, we'll be rated in the president's budget in February, and we'll be seeking what we call a grant agreement with our federal partner in 2021. Construction happening late 2021, 22, 23, opening up late in 23. That's a quick run-through of the project. I think I did it under time. So if there are any questions, I'd be glad to take those now.
Thank you very much. I love the multiple benefits. So, So questions, comments? Councillor Eccles.
Thank you for the presentation. A quick question about the TriMet bonds. Are those existing bonds, or are you going to need to go out for a new bond on that?
I could ask my general manager to answer that. Maybe if I get it wrong, he'll kick me under the table. go ahead.
It's within the capacity of our existing bonds for most of it. There will be a bit we'll have to top up with float of a new bond, but it's still within our debt capacity overall. And I may just comment also, as of late yesterday, TriMet was just reaffirmed by three rating agencies as a AAA bond rating.
Wow.
The only one in North America.
Congratulations. So, Councillor, did you have any other comments or questions?
No. Okay.
So, Mayor Knapp?
Yes, all interesting stuff and clearly needs to be done. My question is how the financing pieces of this interplay with Southwest Corridor financing.
Yes, Southwest Corridor is a much more complicated. It's got a regional funding measure, as you're well aware. So TriMet needs to balance a whole bunch of stuff, its operations, its investment in future projects, and this is one of those future projects. This is one is really kind of a taking care of what you've got. So we've invested a lot in state of good repair, trying to make sure you will notice that we tore up our track September, and we're doing that again out in Gresham, trying to make sure we're taking care of what we've got so we can make sure that we're providing great service to our customers. This is a combination of one of those where we're looking at this opportunity of this small starts to actually leverage state of good repair, which also allows us to extend our service. So when you think of that, it's really a state of good repair and extension. Southwest Corridor is a very important project. It is a bigger regional project, and so we're balancing our input, our cost to that. So we have about $75 million going into that project, along with funds from hopefully City of Portland, Washington County, State of Oregon, and certainly our friends here at Metro, in order to make that a reality.
Regional voters,
thank you.
So will any of the federal programs that are being used on the Red Line also be targets for Southwest Corridor?
You know, two different pots, all part of a larger pot of money called the Small Starts, New Starts. But we are in a competitive group that allows a project up to $300 million. New Starts is really for the light rail, larger project. So there are different buckets of money that we're going after. So I don't think we're in direct competition. We're not competing against ourselves here.
Yeah. Okay. All right. It just helps us understand. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions?
Madam Chair. I want to reiterate a little bit of Doug's thank you. It's just been a great relationship.
Yes.
And David, you and your team have been great. Just as a note, in 2000, PDX had 13 million passengers a year, and now we're going to have 20 million passengers. So
wow.
This is another part of the strategy about finding alternative ways and more meaningful ways to get people quickly to the airport and out again. So thank you very much for your help and cooperation.
And your team, too. It's been a real joy to be able to work with the team.
Mr. Kelsey?
The only thing I might add here is I think it's important to look at this project in context with many other steps the agency is taking to unclog the network, to speed it up. We're literally re-DNAing how we run our business internally. So even if we look at the base on-time performance, just a few years ago, for a whole month, it was 75% on-time performance. As of this morning, the last 31-day rolling average is 91%. And so we've got to be a trusted partner in the competitiveness and the mobility of this region. And so we've got to reduce travel times. We've got to unclog the arteries and the arterial plumbing of the system. And these are just steps, one step in this broader network. So we can, in fact, put more train cars in. We can get people there faster. Eventually get Wi-Fi in the system and all these things that are layering in one step at a time. So but we have to do what our internal body can digest, frankly, while we, as David correctly outlined, We're running on the next generation of rail. For the last 30 years here, we've been running on first generation of rail, so we've not had to replace things. So you're going to see, as most transit agencies, you have to start spending state of good repair, investing in that infrastructure. So next up, next year, we'll be in a very large project on the steel bridge, a really big one. So all trains go through that. So these are all part of a whole long-term strategy to enhance our competitiveness and optimize the assets, frankly, that we've been given. So, just so people understand how this is fitting into a broader game.
Thank you. Mayor.
While it's not a track, we are excited that C-Tran now has a bus from East Vancouver straight to your airport.
Great.
Thank you for letting that happen.
Yeah, it's great to have.
Okay, any other comments or questions? Well, thank you very much. It's really exciting to hear about your progress. So thank you. So, hey, we're at almost...
Nice job.
almost 7:45. You're 8:45 here, 7:45. So with any other comments or questions, I'm going to be able to close the meeting.